Marketing is everywhere. From the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone, we are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
This is the Ben Burnett Show, the only show in America that features a one-term has-been retired politician that nobody knows.
Welcome into the Ben Burnett Show. I want to thank Evans General Contractors, Peachtree Government Relations, Chiringa, and all the people who come along with the show. My guest today is Cole Muzio. Cole, welcome in.
Man, it's great to be with you. I appreciate you bringing good information to your folks out there, and thanks for having me today.
I try. I don't always get compliments, but every once in a while, you can wander into one. So
that's the way it works in politics, right? You hear when you do something wrong.
But. You can't lose them all either. I always say people always say you can't win them all. You can't lose them all.
Just keep swinging.
Tell me this, man. You run an organization called Frontline Policy.
Yes, sir.
How did you get into how did you talk about where you grew up, where you found your calling and your niche? And I call it public service. It sounds cleaner.
Absolutely. Yeah. Public service works for me. I didn't really grow up anywhere. I was born in Stone Mountain. Me and my family, my dad was a pastor, so we moved around a lot. And we lived in Georgia some, Mississippi, Alabama some. And then by the time I was eight, we moved out to Southern California and spent a lot of time out there. But, you know, I remember listening in my parents' car when I was a young kid to Rush Limbaugh on the radio.
He was conservative.
You're very, yeah. And my mom always had him on. And I remember him talking. I had to be 3, 4, 5 at the time. And he was talking about Bill Clinton, and he referenced the president as evil. And I asked my parents, well, why would you talk about the president that way? I didn't know anything. And that led my parents talking about abortion, and Bill Clinton supports abortion. And all, I mean, there were other factors why Bill Clinton was evil. But that kind of led to a lifelong desire to, as you said, public service. And, you know, right after I graduated college, I got hired on to run campaigns. And me and my wife were traveling all over the country doing stuff with that. And then about 5 years ago, we got called into Georgia to start the initial version of our organization, which is Family Policy Alliance of Georgia, which stands for life, religious freedom, God's design, you know, all the biblical values. It's a distinctly Christian organization. And then about a year and a half ago, we left the national organization Family Policy Alliance and became Frontline Policy Council and Frontline Policy Action. And we're committed to those values and growing and making an impact here in the state of Georgia.
As you kind of, where did you go to college? What's your educational background?
I graduated from Huntington College with for my undergrad. Got political science. Exactly. Political science and history. The alma mater of Jeff Sessions, which used to be cooler to say. But I've also got a master's in strategic communication and leadership, as well as an MBA. So I got the two master's degrees to just have them, I guess.
When you get into Georgia, the political circle here, what are those early years and experiences like with respect to, you know, you as an individual? Like, what's your first foray? I think everybody's always, how they wander into it's always hilarious. and sometimes by accident and sometimes not.
You know, I think the biggest takeaway for, you know, because we moved here from Ohio in 2017, you know, I think the biggest takeaway that instantly hits you is, you know, a lot of the southern states, they did a purge when they moved from, you know, being a Democrat state to a Republican state. There was kind of a purge of all Democrats, all former Democrats. Even if they'd converted, the next election cycle, they were beaten. That really didn't happen in Georgia. And so there was kind of real kind of baked in pushback to strong conservative principles, ideology. And as you're breaking into that circle, it really is a tight knit circle of insiders. And as you're breaking into that, you do realize that there's a stranglehold on, here's the way things have always been done. And Brian Kemp, for all the heat he took a couple years ago, a lot of people throwing that heat at him did not realize how strong of a departure he was from the old way of doing things. I mean, he really broke in and said, look, we're going to be a conservative state, and here's what we're going to do, and here's how we're going to do it. And so that was kind of really my biggest takeaway when I came into Georgia in 2017, is our state's got a lot of catch-up work to do on conservative principles. Our governor's done a great job getting us there, but you know, we're certainly not the Southern Bible Belt state that people assumed back in 2017.
No, it certainly changed. And to that point, I don't care what anybody. I do care what people's opinions are, and you try to work to influence them to the greatest degree possible. But Georgia is more competitive from a Republican-Democrat state on a statewide. You can elect a conservative like Brian Kemp, and you can elect a liberal like Senator Ossoff and Warnock. And both of those, you know, when you look at some of the liberal folks that have taken shape in Washington, what do you think makes Georgia different than Alabama or South Carolina and Mississippi? Is it the metro area of Atlanta? Is it people move here because of job opportunities from other parts of the country? In your research, what have you found?
You know, it's all of the above that you just mentioned. Probably the closest parallel to Georgia, I think, which is what has been so informative as Georgia's kind of battled this political climate as it's become a swing state. To your point, it's a center-right state. But the closest parallel, I think, is the state of Virginia, you know, where you have Northern Virginia up in, you know, obviously in the northern part of the state.
D.C.
Yeah, and it's an entirely different entity than the rest of the state. And that's what Atlanta is to the state of Georgia. You got this hub around Atlanta where it's, you know, incredibly diverse, which is awesome. You get all this business activity, you know, essentially another Hollywood, you know, with the movie industry. Georgia's an economic hub and a powerhouse in a way that those other states that you just mentioned are not. And we're dealing with different factors and ideas and, you know, people coming from all over. And it really is a melting pot. And there's also kind of the rest of the state, which is, you know, conservative, Bible Belt, not all that different than Alabama or Mississippi or South Carolina.
It's two states.
It really is. And so I think where I see hope for the conservative movement is what you've seen in some of the numbers where Hispanic voters, Black voters are increasingly identifying with conservative positions on social, family, values, issues. That's boosting people like – this is part of why Brian Kemp won with 53% of the vote last month.
It wasn't close.
It wasn't close. Even though, you know, Georgia's even more diverse than it was 4 years ago. He's governed as a conservative on family issues, and the left has gone so far out of control on those issues that faith-filled voters, which is a diverse community, increasingly cannot identify with the Stacey Abrams, Raphael Warnock, John Ossoff left.
When you look, when we talk about being competitive, I want to ask you, as a guy who I respect, you don't, I don't talk about this. I didn't as an elected official. And because I lived in a 50-50 city in Alpharetta and had Democrats vote for me, but I have an adopted child. Mm-hmm. And if you look underneath the current, you don't have to wonder how I feel about that.
Yeah.
But it's also not something that I don't know that it is. The polarization of it, I'm not sure, is a winning issue to conservatives anymore. And that doesn't mean that we shouldn't talk about it. I'm just saying that those center-right voters, I think a lot of times, believe in a woman's right to choose. I don't care how you feel about that at home. I think that's something that I can't necessarily guard in fact. Mm-hmm. But it is a feeling that is not entirely based in nothing. But you run, I talked to Joan Carr before I sat down with you, and I said, I think Cole's probably to the right of pretty much everybody else I've had on. And she said, very hardline right leading guy. And I was like, I'm excited about talking to him. But you, if you want to influence policy, conversations that move forward, I'm not asking you to change the idealistic nature around what your organization stands for, but how do you pick and choose the issues? And how do you learn how to not go after certain individuals when they can't necessarily toe the line with you 100% of the time?
Well, I think we have to maintain who we are, as you know, to your point of what we are as an organization. That won't change. We're founded on scripture, which is never going to change or veer. But I think you have to have an approach where you have to be political. You have to be systematic in what you're doing. Our legislation can't too far outpace the culture. So you look at the heartbeat law in the state of Georgia. Look, I believe that all life is valuable, and that's what we're going to work towards here in the state of Georgia. But our heartbeat law is a six-week bill that allows for exceptions up to 20 weeks, and it's got a number of exceptions there. It's not a perfect bill. It's a compromise bill. And what we saw this election cycle, when you're talking about the abortion issue, which, you know, doesn't poll well for, you know, if you're someone with my position, that's a minority view. But that was a more palatable view for Georgians than Stacey Abrams' abortion on demand position. And so you cannot too far outpace the culture with where you're going, and you also have to have a strategy whereby you're leading the culture to where you want it to go. So our organization, we're engaging with the business community, we're engaging with the church, we're working to change hearts and minds, and at the same time we're trying to pass good policy and elect good people, because I firmly believe, and as we've seen since, you know, the election of Brian Kemp, when you have good people in places of authority, good things tend to happen. And so I think you have to balance, you know, standing strong for what you believe in, having good, sound, political, pragmatic viewpoints and not too far outpacing the culture, and at the same time having a strategy whereby you can affect change in that culture so that you can continue to move the ball down the field. There's a lot of people that were attacking the governor for having this compromise heartbeat law bill that we passed. We can't go all the way yet. It's going to be a battle if you want to, you know, save every baby. That's a long – it took 50 years to overturn Roe v. Wade. That's a long battle for people that are willing to put in the legwork to make it happen, and it's not going to happen overnight. You got to be patient. You got to be pragmatic, and at the same time, committed to what you believe in.
Isolating the governor and taking him off the table, who are some of the legislators at the Gold Dome that you – really see strong leadership characteristics in? And do you got, how involved are you when it comes to Washington?
We've got, you know, I tell people all the time that, you know, Georgia has its own swamp in Atlanta. There's certainly some villains down there, no doubt. But we also have, I'm really encouraged by the number of really good people down at the Georgia State Capitol. And some of them, thankfully, have risen up to even higher positions of leadership. You know, Burt Jones, I really admired his ability to stand strong, and particularly on one issue in mind, where he was, you know, one of five or six to vote no, and was willing to kind of instinctually say, hey, we're not going to go there. I'm really glad to see him as our lieutenant governor. Bruce Thompson has been a great state senator, a great labor commissioner. We've worked very closely with Marty Harbin, Randy Robertson, Jason Anavitarte. Clint Dixon's a young guy that's done a lot of great things in the state house, in the state senate. In the state house, you've got Josh Bonner, you've got Todd Jones, Jody Lott. I mean, those are some people that are very principled. Ed Setzler now in the state senate. You've got a long list of people, and I'm leaving some people out that I think the world of. Long list of people that are courageous, they're bold, they're smart, they're thoughtful. And a lot of what's exciting, I think, in the state of Georgia is a lot of them are new people. They're young. They're fathers of young kids. Will Wade's another one who passed a number of great bills this last session. They're fathers of young kids. They're coming in. They're invested in our community, and they're going to be in positions of authority for a long time. And so I think there's a real promising future in this for the conservative movement in the state of Georgia. And as far as how involved we are in D.C., you know, we haven't been super involved. We've gotten involved in federal races. We endorsed Rich McCormick. We endorsed Mike Collins in their runoff elections. We got involved in Chris West's race. Certainly supported Herschel Walker against Raphael Warnock. We were very involved with Kelly Loeffler a couple years ago. But we're going to be increasingly involved in D.C. I'm making a trip out there in January. We're going to weigh in on federal policy a lot more as our organization continues to grow. Because I think, you know, while we're here to advance the cause in Georgia, Georgia has a big national voice, and we need to be able to speak to things nationally as well.
When you look down the field, as you said earlier, what does growing your organization look like? How do you get in front of people? What are the organizations that you partner alongside with? I know Senator Loeffler had Greater Georgia, and for people who could have taken their ball and gone home after they sat in federally elected office, she probably did more this cycle than she did in D.C., and that's not taken away from anything that she did in her time in D.C. She was just everywhere you could look.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you grow? What are the organizations that you choose to align with and build around?
Yeah, to your point about Senator Loeffler, I mean, Kelly just did a ton of work this last session. She doesn't get enough credit for what she's done. And
no.
There's been a lot of ink written about what she's done this cycle, but she put in the work and rode the boat and really made sure that a lot of great things got done. As far as growing an organization, we're up to, I think we're the largest social conservative organization in the state of Georgia at this point. We've got, you know, seven people full-time with us now, a couple part-time people as well. But, you know, I've got a vision to triple that. I'm traveling the state. I'm meeting with people. I'm sharing the vision of our organization where we're getting involved in cultural spheres of influence, engaging the church, engaging the Christian conservative business community, making sure that we've got a voice and a connection in every part of our state. And we're really building that out. We're a policy leader. We're an elections leader. And like I said, we've got a comprehensive strategy to make sure that we're electing good people, to make sure that we're engaging with a proactive legislative agenda, to make sure that we're engaging the Christian business community and involving the church. I think the church has been far too silent on issues. So we're doing all that, and we're continuing to build. As far as organizations that we partner with, Alliance Defending Freedom has been a great one over the last several years. They're massive organizations getting involved to make sure that they're defending Christian values at the courts. They're great. We're part of a 40-state network of family policy councils all around the country, so there's about 40 of us all around the country that are doing work in states. We partner very closely with them, and so we're grateful to be work with national organizations like SBA List and others as well that do great work on these issues. So it is a movement, and we're proud to have our role here in Georgia.
When you look and think about some of the issues coming forward in cycles that are away from things that you have traditionally, I won't say stayed away from, but places that you want to go outside of issues based in the church or issues that are based around right to life. What are some of the other ones that don't get as much attention as the billboards?
I gotcha. So our seven core issues as an organization that typically govern what we get involved in are the right to life, religious freedom, God's design, educational opportunity, free speech, human dignity, and principled government. And if you can say those seven things five times fast before you go to bed, I mean, you're really going to be working it. But those are our seven core issues. Now, we are launching Frontline Conservative Business Alliance, which is going to be much more economic in nature. It's to represent conservative business values. It will speak to some of those things, but also to some of the wokeness in corporate America that's, you know, increasing.
Oh God!
Right now.
If I never heard that word again, I'd be fine.
I gotcha, but it's a real thing. I mean, it's something that's really happening,
and it's
so we got to make sure that we got to make sure that we're fighting. It's also going to be supporting, you know, conservative economic agendas like what the governor is going to push forward. So that's an increasing area of focus for our broad organization that necessarily where we were initially started. Also, you know, over the last couple of years, the election issue has been very much, you know, on top of everybody's mind. We endorsed SB 202. We lobbied for that. You know, that's never going to be, you know, one of our top, you know, three issues. But that's where you get to principled government. You know, it's not the people that believe in right to life, religious freedom, God's design, all those things that are trying to cheat at the ballot box. And you have to make sure that you've got a government that you can trust with election integrity. Ranked choice voting is an issue that, you know, is increasingly being talked about. It's a bad idea. It's bad public policy. And that's an issue that we're going to stand against this legislative session.
Well, let me ask you, because for those of you who don't know at home, you see, I believe Alaska has it, and there's mm-hmm. probably, it's probably not by itself.
Maine also has it.
In Maine. So I was one for two.
There you go.
Talk about what it is and why you disagree with it.
So it's where you look at the ballot and you know, if you got five, six candidates, they're all from different parties, and it could apply to primaries too. But instead of picking the one that you like, that you're invested in, that you believe in, you rank them. And, if the guy that you ranked first ends up finishing in sixth,
he's out.
They cross off your vote and they move you down to who is your next choice. And they continue counting in that process until you get down to a winner. There's a few reasons I don't like it. One, it breeds mistrust. I mean, we are coming off an election cycle where there was all sorts of misinformation. There was, you know, some reasons for concern, but all sorts of misinformation that just bred mistrust in the system. When you have ranked choice voting, as we saw in Alaska and so many other places, it breeds mistrust. Also, it is used to make sure that the most moderate candidates win in primaries. You're not going to get big, bold ideas. You're going to get big money, moderate candidates that are going to be the most palatable or most generally known. It's also a tool for the left to make sure that they're funneling money to candidates that are going to best break up the ballot and best strategically move them to win. The left is winning the money battle. And so as you get more candidates into the field, you're going to see, you know, you're going to see leftist candidates that are rising up and topping the bubble. You know, it's a bad system that doesn't work anywhere. In Maine, it costs conservatives a congressional seat. In Alaska, it's cost us a congressional seat there as well. Democrats and liberals tend to pour money into this issue because it's where they win. It's not worked anywhere that it's tried. And again, it tends to push forward more moderate candidates, and it tends to have liberal candidates win. At the same time, it's breeding mistrust as well as kind of having a system that is rife for problems.
As you wade into your one of your seven points, and I've got probably two and a half of them by now.
Okay, there you go.
When you look at education, what's important to you guys with respect to that issue as one of your seven? And where do you guys try to weigh in? Is it your parents belong to you? Is it boys and boys sports, girls and girls sports? I don't really think that's like a Georgia issue, but I know that the federal government's sitting there chomping at the bit to have another partisan fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's education over indoctrination and it's parental rights. I mean, those are going to be kind of your major tent poles of where you're going with that. So, you know, education over indoctrination, the idea of boys playing girls sports, that's an effort of the government to indoctrinate your kids. We all know, we can all see, hey, this is a boy, this is a girl, and they belong on different playing fields when you're coming to a fair field of competition. So, you know, even though that's a sports issue, quote unquote, it's an indoctrination issue. We want to make sure that, the sexual indoctrination of kids going on in schools, the idea that we're going to divide kids on the basis of race, and it's an indoctrination issue. And then when it comes to parental rights, it's both reining in that indoctrination, but also it's choice. We're big school choice organization. I believe that parents should decide where their kids go to school. And I believe taxpayer dollars should follow the kid. I mean, we're in a system right now where the government takes your money, then they tell you where to put your kid and where to send them, and then they're going to tell you what they're going to be taught. And I think that taxpayer dollars should follow the kid. We're going to continue to push for that here in Georgia. That's a long battle moving forward, you know, the school choice issue. But I think we've made some real gains for education across the board this last legislative session, continue to do so. and at the same time need to continue to push the needle on school choice itself.
I don't push on anybody too hard, but I always sit there and push on somebody in one thing. I don't like school choice, and it's not that I disagreed with anything that you said on its face. If I live in North Fulton County and my kids can go to Milton High School or Cambridge, I moved there for that. And that money does follow that kid in the school district, which I chose to buy a house. Same thing with Cherokee, you know, more or less everywhere. And by the way, all three of my children go to the Fulton Academy of Science and Technology. So they go to a charter school. So I'm having a philosophical argument with you based on the fact that my kids go to charter school and I chose for them to go there.
Yeah.
If I grew up in Gwinnett, and let's say I live in Lilburn and am zoned to go to Parkview High School, and I want to send my oldest son, Charlie, to Mill Creek because he's a great football player and he's got all the things, and what Parkview was 20 years ago, it's not today. And I want him to go chase a state championship. But I feel like I should have to live there. If it's a public school, it's a public school. And I feel like those kids are treated relatively the same, synonymous from one school district to the next. But I also think that it protects property values. When you move into an area in North Fulton, the schools are the golden goose. That people can say everything they want about development, and they can say everything they want about all the shiny objects and attractions. People move up there because of the way of life, but they move up there because the schools. If you look at the South, and I don't mind saying this out loud, and you can call me whatever you want to call me. If you look at South Fulton County, the schools aren't as good. Well, I wouldn't necessarily want somebody who didn't align with the same values that I had in the area that I live being able to bus in and deplete the quality of education that my kids have.
I get it on one level. I think if you've got a family that wants to take their child that lives in South Fulton and they care so much about that child's quality of education that they're willing to drive them up to North Fulton to take them to school.
Which they can if there's a hardship, by the way.
They can if there's capacity. They can if there's a hardship, but there's not that right in terms of how we approach education right now. I think that child is going to add a lot of quality value to your child's school. I think that the fact that that family is placing that premium on education, they're willing to work for it, they're driving up there, they're making that happen. I don't see any detraction going on there. I think there's only winners when you provide options. That's what we see in economics. That's what we see across the board in our society. When you provide people with options in the free market and they make their choices, you see good things happen across the board. And I think it is a parent's right, I believe, to determine how their child is educated. And that's from you can move to a particular area, and that's certainly going to make it a whole lot easier, and you're going to have a whole lot.
I think you should have to.
Well, but not everybody can afford to. I think that partly gets to a problem with how we're funding education and how we approach education across the board.
We agree there.
Yeah, we've got some big problems with, I think, how we fund education, how we approach it. But I think the best solution is to say, look, your backpack bill, wherever the backpack is, wherever the child goes, that's where the dollar goes. And so, you know, if you want to send your child to the local private school, well, you get the same dollars that you would be spent at the public school. You get to go do that at the private school. If you want to send your child to, if you're sick of mask mandates and wokeness and violence in Gwinnett County schools, and you want to send your child up to Hall County or to Dawson County, go do that. I mean, that to me is a great exercise of parents being able to raise their children as they see fit and to make sure that their child has the best opportunity. And those children will enrich the environments in which they're going into and will provide more diversity, more opportunity, both for that kid and for the entire school.
I love the family fights that we get to have, like, as kids, because we don't do it enough. And we don't do it publicly and respectfully enough. And I totally disagree with everything you had to say. And while I like the other six things, I want to ask you real quick about, you know, we're turning the page. It's January. Mm-hmm. And we look at 2024. There is no question that you can't take away Donald Trump for all of the warts that he may have on the Republican Party in 2022 was a very conservative president to nominate conservative judges and justices. Now, I will not take that away from him. He and Mitch McConnell, although I'm sure they fought about everything, were relatively in lockstep with some of the things that they could control. When you look at the candidates or the field, the potential field in 2024, what are a couple of things that you guys will look to? Because you're going to get behind somebody.
Yes. So I think one of the things we're going to look at is results. And, you know, you mentioned Trump's success with judges, and we certainly cannot take that away from him, although I do think it's ironic. He's now, you know, certainly attacking Mitch McConnell and Mike Pence, who helped drive that train alongside of him.
Yeah, because he didn't know who they were.
That was not a list of, you know, Donald Trump looking at who are the most conservative philosophical judges out
Correct.
There. Correct. That's a great result, but everything else that his administration did while we had a great 4 years got undone the day that he left office because it was all by executive order. And I think we've got some great rising leaders in our movement that have, you know, Donald, to our point we just made, Donald Trump is not a philosopher.
No.
That's not a guy that's
a marketing machine.
That's not a guy that sat down and thinks, okay, how do I develop a cohesive worldview of conservative principles and has read all the books and is deeply in tune with making sure that every thought he has is consistent. We've got some great leaders that I think are real statesmen that understand how to pass legislation, how to make something last. We're looking, our movement is desperate for leadership. We were promised a whole lot of winning that we would get sick of, and we've lost the 2018 election, the 2020 election, January 2021, November 2022, and now December of 2022. Is the National Republican Party taking a whooping where it shouldn't have? And so we're looking.
The red wave was not very. Wave-like.
In Georgia, it was great outside of races where it was seen as a referendum on Donald Trump. And so, you know, I think we're looking for conservative principled leaders, which I don't know that Donald Trump necessarily is. We're looking for people that can deliver results that can last. And we're looking for winners. We have gotten to this place in the movement where we've got folks that have celebrity and they're going to rely on that. I mean, doing rallies with people that agree with you and doing boat parades with people that agree with you is not a winning recipe for winning an election. You have to do the mechanics of fundraising, building a campaign, establishing your narrative, having a good message. And if you look back at 2020, there was cheating. Yeah, there were issues. Donald Trump did not have a cohesive message for why he should be reelected for president again. You know, it was a campaign lacking in message and narrative.
Vision
as well as mechanics. I mean, you had Kimberly Guilfoyle was running fundraising for last year, which is why the campaign was running on fumes come election day, which is why it had no lawyers on the ground, nobody doing anything. So it was a mess. So we cannot afford to lose in 2024. We can't afford a moderate. We can't afford a weak candidate, but we also cannot afford to lose. And so I think we have an incredibly deep bench as a party, and I think it's past time to explore that and make sure that those candidates have a voice and that make sure that we're hearing the best ideas, best leaders, and best statesmen as we move forward.
Well, Cole, is there anything you would like to say if I give you the last word? I really appreciate you coming on. Well, you know, I love people in general, and I've had the great fortunate opportunity over really the last year as the show's kind of really gone somewhere. Having a midterm election cycle and people who are looking for earned media did not hurt. How do people get in touch with you? How do they find you on social media? What's your website? Give your commercial.
There you go.
All the shameless things, man. I try to
give
it around.
Give us money. I mean, all the great. Frontlinepolicy.com is our website. You can follow me at Twitter at Cole Muzio. Our Twitter handle for our organization is at Frontline Georgia. We have Frontline Policy Action Facebook page as well as a Frontline Policy Council Facebook page. But please pay attention to us through this next year. We're launching a really cool church ambassador network over the next few months. We're ramping up our Frontline Conservative Business Alliance. We're going to be very involved down at the Capitol, but also to the word that you just used, vision. We've got a vision for the state of Georgia and for this country, and we're going to continue to try to implement the strategies needed to achieve that. And so we'd encourage folks to sign up for our email list. I try not to bother people, but you know, we want to make sure that people have relevant, important information, just like what you provide on this podcast. And we're going to try to disseminate that out to you. So sign up for our email list, pay attention to what we're doing. And we're excited about the future of the state of Georgia.
I'm going to give you one bit of free advice. Of everything that you just mentioned, the one that's logged with no algorithms that is where I have seen the most people convert into listeners is LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, for whatever reason, those people have not decided to just push all my content to the bottom. like you find on all the other websites as soon as you have now Lieutenant Governor-elect Burt Jones. Hey, he's Lieutenant Governor when this plays. And you're like, why is that getting so suppressed? LinkedIn, man, is just, it's the Wild West of social media, and nobody uses it that way. That's free. That's free right there.
All right, we'll do our best. I'll follow your advice on everything except school choice.
I hear you. Cole Muzio, thanks for coming in, man. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Marketing is everywhere, from the billboards on the highways to the notifications on your phone. We are constantly bombarded with people trying to sell us stuff. What makes good marketing? Are you doing enough in your life personally and professionally to market yourself? You have questions, and the Marketing Mad Men have answers. Search the Marketing Mad Men on Google or your favorite podcast provider to get practical marketing advice from expert guests who are shaping and reshaping the business world. They say marketing is a madman's game. Join the Marketing Mad Men every Saturday at 4 p.m. to find out why.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation, like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
The Fan is ready for Brave season. Are you?
3-1 smoked high in the air, deep center field, and heading for the horizon. A home run by Olsen.
We're streaming every game of the Braves 2024 season free on the 680 The Fan app.
So make sure you download it now and don't miss a pitch of the Braves this season.